Where I come from, man and woman come together in partnership to enjoy one another, to enjoy that partnership. As soon as that enjoyment starts to disappear from the partnership, then it is doomed. Oh, they may stay together for the children. They may stay together for the comfort and convenience. But it's doomed. They will start to grow apart. And that's tragic. Yes, I make a distinction between a normal way of living and a natural way of living, because what is normal, as we really can see in our own experience in looking around us, is not natural. And to be natural is to be free. To be natural is to live a harmonious life, a life that in which there are no problems. It is said that everybody has to face difficulties. But I don't know that. I don't have any difficulties in my life. So therefore, of course, I don't have any problems in my life. And that's because I'm free. And most people don't even know that they're not free. And I think the first thing for everybody that comes to me to realize is, I am not free, but I see that I can be free. Now, to get rid of that unhappiness that people have, they have to be intelligent, and they have to be willing. They have to be willing to give up, for instance, their anger. Now, you've only got to be willing to give up your anger. You won't be able to give up your anger necessarily immediately, because it's so close to the surface. Remember, my anger is myself. And I've been living. My anger is myself for years and years. Everybody has. And so when I want to give it up, because it's a part of me, it's not going to be given up that easily. Since I've expressed my anger, my guilt, my fears, my doubts, as myself so readily all my life, when I want to give them up, it's not so easy. But because I have inside of me this being of intelligence, this wonderful consciousness, once I'm willing to give it up, that's half the battle. I then start to be detached from my anger more and more. In other words, every time I go to get angry, my intelligence gets there first. And eventually, the anger won't be able to get there first, because I'll be there first. And why will I be there first? Not because I'm suppressing my anger, because I must not suppress my anger. I must do this because I know and realize that anger is hurtful to my system. I get all tight when I'm angry, and afterwards I have a conversation with myself, don't I, what I should have said and what I shouldn't said. And that's not peace. That leads to worry. And anger, as I've said, destroys the lives of the people around me. The one that I love, the woman, if I'm a man, or the man that I love if I'm a woman, he's not going to be love me or can't love me while I'm angry. He might endeavor to. But it's a psychic force, and it pushes the people away from you. And they don't want to be there, because anger is violence. And it has a terrible effect on the children, who with their young psyches and minds are open to this conditioning. What's the world about? So if dad and mum can get angry like that and shout and scream at each other, then that must be what this world is about. And that's a terrible... That's another terrible take an impact on the young mind and the young psyche. And so it doesn't do any good at all, anger, except to satisfy myself. And the same with guilt. I can only be guilty about the past. And there's nothing good in the past. Nothing is good in the past. Because if I think about the past, say I'm in a nice, contented state of mind and just walking around, and suddenly someone mentions my mother, who perhaps is dead, and I've done something unkind to in the past. Immediately an emotion of guilt rises in me, from inside, just like anger. And I can't be still anymore. I start to get a feeling of remorse in me. And when someone speaks to me, I can't be natural. I'll be normal and cover up my guilt by my personality, using my personality. But inside my system, I will be unhappy. And then that will subside until someone else pushes another button, emotional button. And then I still won't be what I am, because I'll be responding to my old self. Now, to be selfish is quite a self-explanatory, isn't it? If I'm self, then I'm selfish. If I'm love, I don't know any word with lovish, do you? No, there's only selfish. And if I'm selfish, I'm a person who, from time to time, gets angry, resentful, worries, gets sad, moody, doubtful, fearful, and all the rest of those selfish emotions. Now, they're selfish because if I am angry, the person next to me is not necessarily angry, or the one behind me or over there. It's purely exclusive, is selfishness in the moment. Whereas love, that I'm talking about, is universal. It never goes, never disappears, except when selfishness overpowers it. But the love is still there. So love is universal because it's not exclusive. It's in everybody. It is everybody. But in everybody is this selfishness which they have learned to attach themselves to, selfishness being negativity. So love, it necessarily follows, is to get rid of my selfishness. Now, of course, in our society, we don't call anger selfish. We don't call self-judgment selfish. We don't call guilt selfish. But our society is so ignorant that it can't see the truth of anything because it uses its mind and emotions. Whereas if your mind is straight, which means you must go straight to the intellect and not to the moving mind, because the intellect is very still. Where the mind moves in front of it, it cuts off the genius, the total genius of the intellect. And if my mind is still, through the practice of the spiritual life as I teach it, then I am able to use my intellect and I can perceive straight, like selfish. It's so obvious. It's of myself and it's exclusive. It's not universal. Now the question, have I suffered enough or have you suffered enough yet, means, are you ready to give up your suffering? But if you haven't suffered enough yet, if you haven't had sufficient heartbreaks from your lover leaving you, from the person that you love most dying, if you haven't had enough suffering from that, then I'm afraid you're going to have some more. That's life. For life is not a perverse thing. It's not a lottery. It's not a chance thing. Life is run by God, the intelligence behind the entire existence of us all. It is a vast intelligence. And all that those circumstances, those heartbreaking circumstances, the only reason that they exist is to bring us to our senses, to give us such a shake which often happens when somebody dies or somebody leaves you and you're really reduced. There's no talk of growth movement then, or Einstein's theory. No, that's all discarded then. The thing is, at that moment of great loss, I'm vulnerable. I'm open. I'm open to the truth. And if only somebody would speak the truth to me, like the Master, if he was there, then it's possible that I would hear him, because I am so open to something else, to an explanation of this terrible pain that I have. But the scientists haven't thrown God and the Master out the window, and all the people thinking scientifically with their rational minds, the Master's very seldom there. And so the people must continue to suffer until they come to their senses and seize that moment of great loss to say, what is the truth of why I am suffering? And the answer is, I am attached to the past, because somebody who's died is already in the past as far as their existence is concerned, and I'm holding on to them. And that body's going further and further down the stream of time, being destroyed by fire or buried in the ground. And I'm hanging on to it, and it's already in the past and has no meaning whatever, for only the love that I had for them is real. And that's now. Myself will always do something to destroy love or peace or rightness or goodness. Because you see, it is made of pain, and it rises up from within me to get into the love and harmony that I have with my partner. It rises up in her too. And as soon as pain comes into love, then it's no longer love. It's got an essence of pain in it. So we've got to be able to dissolve the self, to not allow it to enter our relationship. First of all, through my being, and then through your being, the woman's. You have to be as responsible as I have to be. Otherwise, ourselves are going to destroy our love that we had at the beginning. And that is a tragedy, and one that's repeated everywhere. Life is about love and honesty and truth and harmony and sweetness and rightness and firmness and the ability to have an authority that comes from a place inside which is not of any self. The great impediment to the love between man and woman is that they have not realized, they do not know the difference between love and sex. And this applies particularly in the case of woman, because she is the prize of existence. And if she doesn't know the difference between love and sex, she gets distracted from what she is. And when she's not being what she is, she gets moody, emotional, unhappy, unfulfilled. And love, I'll speak, love, first of all, to know what love is, you have to know what the false is, because love is true and sex is false. So the best way to demonstrate love is to demonstrate sex to you. Now, sex is violent. That means it's trying to reach an end, either an orgasm or the power over another. It's always got an end. Sex is impatience. So if the man that a woman's with is impatient, he has sex in him. For love is not impatient. The love between man and woman physically is not impatient. Sex can be interrupted in the action of making love. If the phone rings or they're interrupted by the children, then the sex in either is likely to get frustrated. Whereas love would never get frustrated by the sexual act being interrupted, because the love is always there and there's nothing to be interrupted except the action, and that does not matter because we can always come back again. But sex is impatient. Sex is also demanding. Give me an orgasm, get me more excited. It makes the mind move to visualize sexual situations of the past, to give the emotions more power, to get me more excited, so that I can disappear into this excitement. That's sex, not love. Love does not imagine other bodies while I'm making love to this body, this woman. Sex pursues ardently and then forgets about love. Having pursued so ardently, it can forget about love and go away until the biological urge comes again, or the imagination has provoked the desire to come back to the woman instead of loving her, just loving her. So whatever sex is, love is the opposite. Love does not get discontented. Love does not get frustrated. Love does not get impatient. Love never has to say, if it's a man, oh, I've got to come, I've got to have release. Not true, that's sex. Sex has to have release, not love. I have defined woman as being 100% love and man as being 90% love with 10% something to do. And this is obvious in every woman's and man's experience, this fundamental definition of man and woman. I'm saying fundamental because the way our society has progressed, with its emphasis on the mind, the thinking, and emotional apparatus, the way that that has taken over our lives, it's not very clear. We can't get down to the fundamental of what we are. But the truth is, because man pursues her and never stops thinking about her, the truth is that she is in her own body being. She is 100% love. She doesn't really want to go to the office. She doesn't really want to work the computer. She doesn't really want to join the army. That's her personality, and that is her emotional self that wants to do those things because it's been denied her. That can be her interest, but interests are not love. And what she really wants to do is to be loved. That's her fundamental nature. Now, man, as we know, is also love because he is a noble thing, a beautiful thing as she is. But he has 10% something to do, for he built the world. Woman didn't make this world. If it had been woman's world, that fundamental, entire love, it would be a totally different earth, a world on this earth that we have. But man built it, and so he was the 10% action that did it. And now every woman knows that man is always active. He's always thinking, or is always going to do something, he's always got to do something. And one of the best demonstrations I can give that even after he makes love with her, when they're both in a beautiful place, it's not long before he wants to jump up and do something, whereas she is quite prepared to lie there, on and on and on, in this state of love that they have made. Yes, sometimes people might think that making love is the basis of my teaching. Well, it's not quite true, because the making love is done in existence, and we're only here for 60, 70, 80 or 90 years, and there's not going to be any love made physically when we're dead. So it's only in existence that love making is important. But the strange thing about it is that this love between man and woman can bring us into the realization of the love of God in existence, which is what man and woman's love is. So when they make love, they actually make God, or make intelligence, or make consciousness of the truth. And what is the truth? The truth is always out of existence. And the truth out of existence is the abstract God. That extraordinary thing that when, for instance, I am God realized, it is necessary to be God realized before you can be enlightened. That only means that many years ago I realized God behind existence, out of existence, that ineffable, indescribable being. I don't even like to call it being, because it is behind everything. I realize that, made it real inside me as knowledge which can never leave me. It is there every day, every moment. If anyone were to ask me a serious question about God, wake me up in the middle of the night from my sleep, I would be able to answer it at any time. For I am God realized. I've realized what God is and the truth that goes with that. Now, we are creatures, I must repeat, in existence. This is where we eat. This is where we breathe. So this is a different place to that which is out of existence. And the task, as far as I can see it, in my own experience, and I'm sure everyone can see this in their own experience, the task is to bring that ineffable love, which is truth outside existence, God, into existence where you and I breathe and eat and wash up. And what is our fundamental desire here? It is to be in union with man, between man and woman, to have that union. And that, by the way of things and by the integrity of the great God, which is behind it all, leads us to God in existence, and then to realize God again outside existence as love. It comes down to woman must be in command of love. She is the power to change this existence. Or you can't change the masses. They will never change. They are always eternally ignorant. But the individual woman who hears the way I speak and therefore hears it in her own experience and knows, starts to discover what love is and what sex is, she turns to love. She then becomes the guardian of love on earth in our very loveless times, our very imaginative loveless times. She refuses to have sex with a man. She says, you show me that you love me first, and then perhaps we can make love. But while you're angry, while you're restless, while you are unable to listen to me as I endeavor to pass on or communicate what love is to you, if you want to bluster and justify your own behavior, you can't make love with me. No. In that way does she start to change man. Not by teaching him as I do, but by the very straightforwardness of her own realization of what love is. Man starts to heed that he is now with a woman who truly knows what love is, who truly has a power to not compromise with his sex and his excitement. And then if he's man enough, he gives them up. And he then discovers the greatest pleasure on earth. Love. Physical love with a woman. Without excitement. And without mental stimulation. He then discovers the prize of existence, for she gives it to him. For otherwise, she can only give him excitement. And that pulls them both down. So she's in the position of actually creating a decent man, worthy of love, who, if ever he leaves her, will have the ability to love a woman inside of him as a result. And that can change a little piece of our society, perhaps.